What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week we are kicking off season 3 of the threequel, and we are going to Wakanda to do it. We'll do it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I'm one of your co-hosts, Ethan Klein. Here with me, Mike Duranik.
What's going on, man?
And Brad Miller.
I got bumped from second to third. I always get introduced second after yourself. But
usually we're sitting in a different order tonight. I usually just look to my left and go around the table. So
I'm doing well, thank you.
It's the third season, Brad. We've got to keep it fresh for our listeners, and we really only have so many things we can do.
Sounds good to me. I'll take it.
You guys both look surprised. Did you know that this was the start of season 3?
I didn't until you said that, but it made sense once you said it, that this is our February of movies coming out. So
2 years ago, we were recording, what was our first, was Old School our first episode?
Ooh, man. Good question.
No, Footloose.
Footloose, Old School.
Somewhere. I can have the answer for you here in a second.
But anyways, around this time, that was back when we would record weekly.
One of the two of you was correct, and it is Old School.
Okay, so we started
Old School, then Footloose, Silence of the Lambs, and Deadpool was our first.
That was quite operation. I mean, we still discuss like how things change, but it's not necessarily like the crux of the podcast anymore. But that was kind of the angle we went with at the beginning. And about 30 seconds into Old School, they drop a very derogatory no-no term that you're not allowed to say anymore. So I do remember sitting watching that and, oh, well, that's a good way to kick off the show. So none of that here in this episode. This movie, there is no political incorrectness in this film. It came from Disney. They definitely can't do that. But no, this week we are talking about Black Panther, the group choice for the month of February. This is newly eligible because it came out in February of 2018. Pretty massive year for Marvel. I'm pretty confident that when we get to May, I think it was a May release, we'll be doing the even bigger release that Marvel had that year. But we're starting it here with Black Panther. So, guys, I say we just dive right into it the way we always do, and I'll ask you guys the question. How did you first come to see this film? Was it in theaters in February of 2018? Did you catch it later? Maybe Brad hasn't even seen this. We know that Brad's interest in comic book movies has ebbed and flowed, certainly over the time of this podcast. So what was your first experience with Black Panther?
Drum roll. This was my first experience with Black Panther. I had not seen it prior to this. So my experience for this one consisted of, I don't know how long the movie is, but I was on the treadmill for the whole movie walking, getting some steps in. So it was my first fully exercised movie that I've done. It was an interesting way to watch a movie. I will say that you walk farther than you realize when you're watching a movie, and your feet are pretty darn sore at the end. But fun way to watch, and I enjoyed it.
I am 99.9% sure I saw this in the theater. I can't tell you when in its release I saw it, but I'm pretty sure that this is another one that I was told by my friend John that I needed to go see, and so we went and saw it. And really, I knew nothing, as is often the case for me in superhero movies, outside of the Batmans, the Spider-Mans, right? I knew nothing about the character. I didn't know the background. I didn't know much about the story. Certainly couldn't have put Wakanda on the map, right? But very quickly enthralled by the story, enjoyed it, have watched it a couple of times since. And so I'd say this is probably my fourth time watching this movie since it was released.
I saw this opening night when it came out in theaters, as I'm to do with most big movies, but especially if you've listened to this podcast any amount of time, you know how big of a fan of the Marvel franchise I am. This one was about as unique of an experience as I'm going to get, especially with a Marvel movie on opening night. I went with a friend of our former podcast, Phil Zach, however you may or may not know him, and with my father. All three of us went. We went to the theater in Elkhart. I'm confident in saying that we were the only three Caucasian people in that theater. And I wasn't really aware of it until there were things happening on the screen that were garnering a lot of response from the audience, and I had no idea why. And after the first couple, I kind of looked around and said, oh, there's a reason I don't know why. That reason's okay. I'm really glad that everyone else is enjoying this as much as they are. And this is one of the Marvel movies. I saw it. It was fine. I've grown to like it more and more and more every time I've rewatched it, including this time for the podcast. And it is the only Marvel movie to be nominated for Best Picture. Maybe giving a little bit away for the next part of the show, but I usually end up giving that away by the time we play the game anyway. And the game that we do play, so we might as well dive into it, is the Rotten Tomatoes game. This is how we kind of kick off our conversation of the film. And as also as often to kick off a month, I have no idea who's supposed to be playing in the game right now. None of us ever do. So since you guys are just going to say I cheated, I'll let you guys play. And I think I did this last time and I made you be on the hot seat, Mike. I do remember that. So Brad, we're going to just put you on the hot seat. You're going to have to guess. The way we do this is whoever's playing, one person guesses first, the other person gets the chance to snipe them one way or the other. So, Brad, what do you believe is the sitting Rotten Tomatoes critic score for Black Panther?
I'm guessing because of the stuff that this movie covers and how well done it was, and I think this is completely just off the top of my head, I think Marvel movies tend to score fairly well. So I'm going to go with a fairly high score. I'm going to say 96. I'm going to go with a 96 because, yeah, it doesn't give much room for the above, and I think that there's a chance that it might, that Mike might have gone with that if I'd gone 94 or 95. So 96 is where I'm going to land.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I was thinking 95 in my head, so I'm going to go with 95, but it's got to be right in that 94, 95, 96 range. The reason I won't go over here is that I can't see it being a 100, right? I can't see it being in the Good Will Hunting range, but I think it's got to be close. So we'll see if Brad's on the nose, if I'm on the nose, or if it's just slightly under, slightly over.
So the audience score for this film is a 79. That is where the audience has it sitting. Critics vastly disagreed, as I already said, that it garnered a Best Picture nomination. And someone was right on the nose. It actually was Brad. Brad, it is at 96%.
For real?
It is, yes, at 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. So now Brad gets to start his month without us accusing him of it.
No, I that was higher than I would have put it myself. I would have said probably 91, 92.
Yeah.
But I think that this was one of those movies that, for whatever reason, in society or the, you know, even in political world or whatever, this is going to score fairly high. So I'm shocked that the fans had it that low.
As am I.
But I went high for gamesmanship. And I'm glad that it put me right on the nose.
The next question I always ask is Rotten Tomatoes correct? And I think the bigger, more shocking thing to look at is the audience score. It baffles me that it is at a 79%, especially with the topic that it covers, the culture that it's getting into, and just the experience that I had in theaters. I mean, watching this with a predominantly African-American crowd, this obviously resonated with that culture. Like it I thought it was a really good movie, and there's obviously a demographic of people that it meant something even more to that I could never connect with, and I thought it was good, like really good. It is shocking to me that it's sitting at a 79. It got the Best Picture nomination. It made $1 billion. Like there was nothing about this to put it in that spot just based on the film itself.
So remind me, I'm not the expert on this, but if I wanted to go on and I wanted my ranking of this fresh or not fresh to be heard, I sign up for an account and then I just say fresh or not fresh and it goes into the aggregate for is it, you know, if I say it's fresh, it moves up to 79.1, and if I say it's not, it's 78.9 or whatever.
how do you get it? How do you
get
it?
Well, I'm just saying, anyone can sign up and can say yes, right?
There's some way that you have to prove that you've seen it.
Okay.
I don't know what that audience score goes into. I don't know if they're grabbing people in New York, Chicago, and L.A. as they leave the theater. Okay. I'm not sure exactly what goes into that.
Yeah, so it's not just random. You can't just randomly sign
up. I'm sure there is a percentage of it, but yes, for the most part, okay. It shouldn't be.
Well, and the reason I ask that is, like, I do want to say on this, if the audience score on some of the other Marvel movies that we have reviewed is substantially higher than this, you know, I just have to say that, unfortunately, I would suspect that some of the things that you saw and experienced in your experience that you said, man, this is great for me, I am enjoying this, and I'm seeing that it is even more meaningful to other people, is unfortunately the same reason that some people probably mark this down, because this movie shouldn't have a lower audience score than Captain America: Civil War.
Right.
It shouldn't have a lower audience score than Logan. Those are all different movies, but this movie was really well done. So, in this sense, is it a 96? I mean, you know, it depends. It's not as good of a technical film maybe as some movies we've seen, but when you're grading it against superhero movies,
yeah,
I can buy that, but it's certainly in the low to mid 90s, and so I would say the audience has it wrong.
Yeah, Rotten Tomatoes, if it comes in at 96, I think there's a few things about it that I would say, you know, would bring that score down just a little bit. To me, a 96 has to be a fairly flawless movie. That not only is it flawless, but it's, you know, something you probably want to rewatch a lot. It's something that resonates with a lot of people. And I think for some, that's where this movie lands. For me, it's not one that I might not ever see it again. So, to me, that's why it comes in at low 90s, but I wouldn't argue or have a huge problem if anyone said they're going to defend the 96.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing, I guess, about this movie, it's kind of going to sound like I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth, and we'll start to kind of transition into like what we actually see on screen. I generally gauge comic book films on the villain, kind of like with action films. How good is the villain? Because that's what really sets it apart. And up until Spider-Man No Way Home came out, which I guarantee Brad didn't see, Mike, I don't know if you've seen it yet, I think that Michael B. Jordan's Killmonger is the best villain that the MCU has had. Willem Dafoe topped that coming back as Green Goblin in No Way Home, but for a period of time, I think he was the best. And that's saying a lot. I think he's even better than Thanos, for me personally. With that being said, as we'll get into, like, our favorite scenes, favorite lines, my absolute favorite part of this entire movie is Michael B. Jordan's Killmonger. And there does come a point where my favorite part of the movie probably should be Black Panther, and it's not. So I, you know, just being honest about, like, I think this movie's probably in the mid-80s, definitely not a 96, that's why. I think they developed a really, really good story, great story, but I ended up being a little more engaged with the villain than the hero himself. And I don't know where you guys are at, what you guys saw, if you think I'm just completely off base, but I just think what Michael B. Jordan brought into this, it looked like he was having as much fun as he's ever had in a movie I've watched him be in, while also being really engaging, and while also, as a villain, is he bad? He's a bad guy. Yes, he is. But the way they built his character up and why he was doing what he was doing was flawless, I think, if you're developing a villain that's somewhat realistic and not just a mustache twirling, I'm going to nuke the world. And I thought that was the best part of this movie, was how they created this villain.
Yeah, I think that my only problem with that is you can have that without him becoming a quote-unquote bad guy, you know, and I know you have to do that for the purpose of the film. But had he just said, you know what, because of what happened to my father, I'm going to go back and I'm going to take my rightful place on the throne, or at least get my rightful, my chance to take that place on the throne, and then he got it, and then he led Wakanda in a positive way, you know, like, hey, things aren't going to go the way they did when I was a child, and you could have had that, and I would have gotten more behind him. I think it was how quickly his focus changed from, I'm going to kill him and take the throne, to, now Wakanda's going to rule the world was just a little bit too drastic for me.
Right. I'm not saying I agree with him. Like, he's a bad guy. I'm not saying that he's right. It's just watching this kid in Oakland in the 90s see his dad get murdered, and then violence is probably all he knew his whole life, and then working for America, the CIA or whoever he ended up working for, was more than happy to let this guy murder however many people and be proud, you know, you're doing your American civic duty by doing this for us, then getting to a point where now that he's finally the one in power, he's going to show people what's up. How else could that have gone for this person, right? Like, all he has known in his life and been encouraged to do is hate and kill, and now he's been given the keys to the kingdom. Like, that is way more engaging to me than Hydra, right? In the other Marvel movies, like, okay, they're Nazis, cool. This guy actually has a real true-to-life story that could happen. Very easy to see how a kid could get raised up that way and end up who he was.
Well, I think that going even a step further, it's not just a story that could happen, right? But if you take it out of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, unfortunately, it is a story that does happen to a degree each and every day, right? We are all largely, in large part, products of our environment. And I think that is what makes this movie to me so engaging and makes Killmonger and Michael B. Jordan's portrayal of him so impactful for me is that, yeah, I think that the movie actually loses impact if he comes in and says, I'm going to kill him, and now we're going to make the world a better place peacefully. Because that wouldn't be true to his character. That wouldn't be true to his experience. That wouldn't be true to what he saw and how he was raised. And I think that's the part of this is when we allow generations of kids, right, to see nothing but violence, to see nothing but the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, at what point do you reach that break point? And it happens, unfortunately, all too often in our world, and not just in the U.S. It certainly happens the world over. And the hook here, of course, is that he's saying, you know, there's this racial inequality, there's these socioeconomic divides, and yet the wealthiest country in the world is looking the other way, and it happens to be, you know, the same race.
Yep.
And so that's where it's different. Now, setting that aside, the discussion about Michael B. Jordan, we saw him recently in Creed when we did that. As I had mentioned in prior podcasts, I recently was doing and have now completed a rewatch of Friday Night Lights, so saw the last two seasons of that, and yep. him in this. Man, just a dynamic actor. We don't need to, you know, rehash his entire career as we have in the past, but every time I revisit one of these movies or one of his roles, I am just blown away and really excited to see where he goes as he moves forward in his career, because I think this was maybe the best performance in a Marvel movie overall. What else would you put up against it?
I mean, it's up there. I don't know. I genuinely believe that what Robert Downey Jr. did in Endgame is actually, like, high-level acting, and I would have been okay with him getting nominated for supporting actor for that. I think that was actually, like, really, really good. And Willem Dafoe could have gotten nominated for Best Supporting Actor in No Way Home. I also would have been okay with that. But if this is the best, it's not a bad thing. Like, it really is. And just, like, the character design, and I've told you before, like, just from the first second you see him on screen, like, this guy's really cool. Like, it's hard not to, like, be excited about his action scenes, because he also just looks really freaking cool. Like, the scars from all his kills, and he just wants to wear that mask, that tribal mask, just because, like, just the way he just carries himself.
What do you say? I'm feeling it?
Yeah, like, it's just, yeah, they just made him really freaking cool, and that just... That's what makes it really fun.
See, there's holes in the whole thing about, though, how he was raised. We don't really know how the kid was raised. His father could have been really good and taught him about peace, and who knows? We're making a suggestion as to how he was raised, right? But
we didn't have his father, that's why.
Well, yeah. But his father, I mean, he had his father till he was, what, 12?
Well, right, 13? I mean, I guess I took it because they were planning... Maybe I'm wrong in how they took that, but I'm assuming that his father was enacting a small scale version of the plan he was trying to do once he got Wakanda.
Correct, but we don't know that he was teaching his son anything about any of that, right? We're making a leap to say that he was raised in a violent world or was taught about violence, all of this stuff. Like, is it there? Probably. He was raised on the streets. He's going to see a lot of that. I get that. But then you also have a character who, was his father murdered? Sure. You know, but if you're looking at the intent of the word defense, possibly. Now, the mistake they made was leaving the kid behind, you know, and they suggested that in the film as well. But, like, it's not like his father was killed in cold blood and he witnessed the murder. It's not like, you know, he was raised to be some sort of street thug that, you know, all you know is killing and violence and, you know, whatever. There's a lot of things there. So, like, where did this anger come from? It's him filling in a lot of the blanks and coming to conclusions that he had to come to. So this misguided anger towards this country, and then also then taking that one step further into the world is, like, you know, it just left a little bit to be desired for me to say, okay, it makes sense that he wants to rule the world now because he has these resources, you know. But that's nitpicking. Yeah, I still think the plot is really good and it makes a lot of sense. But it's nitpicking on a 96.
I think it's the engaging, like, I think what made Thanos so great, and I mean, we'll talk more about him in a couple months when we do Infinity War. Spoiler alert, I'm picking Infinity War when we get there. They gave you that little nugget of he sees an issue of overpopulation, which is an issue, like, could be an issue, like, but obviously he's a psychopath, he's a genocidal murderer, but they want to add that in there so there's some kind of legitimacy to what he's doing. This, I just think, is that with much more understanding behind what it is, right? Like, yes, he's going to kill a lot of people, but he's not a genocidal maniac that's going to kill trillions. He's fighting for what he thinks is a wrong,
but
to himself personally. So I think the more personal battle engages the audience more.
This is similar to the Winter Soldier without the brainwashing.
Yeah.
It's almost like he brainwashed himself. Winter Soldier makes more sense because you take this guy that, you know, in a sense is going to be good if you turn out the way he could or should turn out, and now you have someone who's just as, well, maybe not just as psychopathic, but in some ways he is, simply because he filled in his own blanks as to why
he's dead. Well, it's scarier because it's his choice, too. Winter Soldier didn't have a choice. This guy's choosing to be
right.
This cold-blooded.
I think it's scarier because, again, we can say, yeah, he's filling in the blanks, but what blanks is what other blanks is he supposed to fill in, right? He doesn't know, presumably, why his father is all of a sudden murdered, but he knows roughly who did it, right? And so he presumably, as you gather from this, he loved his father. He all of a sudden doesn't have his father. And I guess also to, like, think that he might have been raised separate from this belief his father had that his father clearly was willing to die for, was willing to be treasonous for, right? Well, that doesn't track either with, I mean, any of our experiences, right? Our parents, whatever is most important to them, they pour into us. Yeah. So presumably it's been poured into him. But I think the broader thing is, you know, unfortunately, we are, again, I'm coming back to, right, we're products of our environment. And the environment that he was raised in was an environment in which his father could be murdered from his perspective. He may not know any better in cold blood. No one's held accountable to it. He's left behind. He has to survive. He has to become this person who is celebrated for killing other people and is celebrated for doing that stuff. I can imagine, and I guess do you infer that shifts his worldview so tremendously that taking the action he did seems rational, and in fact seems just.
Yeah.
And I think that is where the similarity between he and Thanos, it's easier to wrap your mind around this than Thanos on that. But they have become convinced not just that what they're doing is right for them, it is to be just for the world in his case, or for the universe in Thanos' case.
So the movie is called Black Panther, so we should touch on Chadwick Boseman, RIP. He's someone we haven't talked about on the podcast before, so it is a little more worth looking at his filmography. And he's a guy, I think, as this movie was coming out, I was definitely more excited for Chadwick Boseman than I was for the Black Panther character. One of the people that I didn't know a ton about that character from a comic book's perspective. I obviously knew who he was, knew a majority of it, but not everything. It's Chadwick Boseman's one of these guys that the first time I saw him was in 42, I think, is the first thing I really remember recognizing him for. And I think he's fantastic. For what little we had of him, and a majority of it being this character, he's definitely one of the people that, like, anytime someone dies that young, it's a tragedy. But thinking of what could have been, what he could have accomplished, this guy was going to win Academy Awards. He got nominated for at least one, but he would have ended up winning awards someday. I mean, 42, he's fantastic as James Brown, if you've ever seen Get On Up. Then got introduced into the Marvel franchise but before he passed away. And I think the best thing he brings to this character, and I think about it more from Civil War, just because that was the first movie he was in with this, you buy this guy instantly as a king. Never once did I question that he is not, like, the strongest person in every room he walked into, but also, like, could be regal and could be a leader. I think that's the most perfect point of casting they did for this, is that I always bought him as the king of a country.
Yeah, just the look that he gives, right? There are some of those looks when they're sitting in the throne room and he's listening to everybody, when he's talking with his sister, you know, there's those looks that he gives that I agree with you, regal, but it just such confidence exudes him in that there's no doubt that he is listening, but he is going to make the decision. He believes in his ability to rule. He believes in his ability to lead. And you see it even in the discussions with what to do with Killmonger. He shows up. He's like, well, we did something wrong, right? Strong leadership.
Yeah, I think that obviously you didn't get to see really him be a full leader in this film because he was still embracing the role and overcoming some doubts that he had of himself and his legacy. So I think that obviously, you know, the plan was for him to move forward in the role and have that more drawn out, and that was taken from all of us as watchers. But from what I saw in this, plus, you know, a few smaller parts in an ensemble cast in those other films, definitely a very cool character and clearly they're a great casting choice.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be tough for us to ever get to Civil War because we'll get Infinity War this year and Endgame next year. So I'll say it now. One of my favorite lines in the entire Marvel catalog is right after his father dies in Civil War. And I think it's Black Widow tells him, like, you have to let us do our job. We're gonna bring in the Winter Soldier. And he just looks at her and he says, I'm a king. I'll kill him myself. Like, just that, like, all right, cool. Like, this guy is freaking awesome.
I mean,
like,
for the timeline of when this comes out, are we talking about Chadwick Boseman or Brock Purdy? Because all of these things can be said about him too. He's gonna go take out the king or take out the bad guy.
He may. So I don't know who else. There's a ton of people in this movie. Was there anybody else that stood out to you guys that helped win this thing? I personally don't really care for the romance in this one. I think they actually did a better job of making me convinced that these two were in love with the sequel, Wakanda Forever, and Chadwick Boseman has passed, just based on Lupita Nyong'o. Lupita Nyong'o, world-class actress, she's already won an Academy Award, she'll probably win more. I just didn't buy that much of that.
Yeah, that wasn't the primary. A completely secondary character, but one that I thought played well in the movie and brought a lot and stole some scenes. Andy Serkis, I think, just did an incredible job. And I always appreciate it when I see Andy Serkis pop up in something like this because, of course, I think Andy Serkis, I immediately think Gollum.
Yes.
Right? And his phenomenal work in that. But to see him in a role like this and just how entertaining and weird and strange, yes, but engaging, like, I'm there with him in every scene, and just the interrogation, he's laughing and he's just all over the place. He steals the scenes and he brings a lot to it and he adds a lot to the movie.
I love when he gets a chance to be on screen so that people who think that motion capture isn't real acting can appreciate that he's a good actor. Because if we didn't still live in the 1950s, like apparently people think we do, Andy Serkis would have been nominated for Best Lead Actor for War of the Planet of the Apes. Mm-hmm. But people think that just because you put dots on your face and they change some things, you're not actually acting.
Is he the guy that was Watson in the Sherlock
Holmes? No, that's Martin Freeman. Okay. Andy Serkis is the dude with the fake hand that mm-hmm. shoots things.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Both of those characters did well in this. Yeah, he was very convincing as a bad guy in this. Like, you know, I was in a lot of ways glad that Michael B. Jordan took him out, because I thought he was going to be the downfall of a lot of things. I didn't know where that was going with that partnership. So,
and the scene where he takes out his girlfriend as well, which I remember that was the moment where I was like, oh dear God, like this guy is savage. Because I just kind of expected, like, oh, they're going to give him the little throwaway, like, girl that goes with him. But then when you think about it, he couldn't have brought anyone else with him into Wakanda. But, when that happened in the theater, I jumped. Like, oh, my God. Like, this guy isn't messing around. But it's a good piece of storytelling to put that in there. Let's do favorite scene first. What was your guys' favorite scene from Black Panther? And if you say the CGI fight at the very end, we're going to have problems. Because that's definitely not it.
If you know yours, Mike, go ahead.
My favorite scene in the entire movie is right after that. I think it is the going out and seeing the sunrise or the sunset. Yep. And just Chadwick Boseman and Michael B. Jordan. And just the scene there with the two of them having that conversation. And Michael B. Jordan making the decision, like, yeah, no, I'm not going to let you save me just so that I can sit in jail and be imprisoned, right? Like, even at the end, agree with him, disagree with him, he was still principled. And he's like, look, I lost, but I'm going out my way. And so I appreciated the acting in that scene. I appreciated just the sentiment that was delivered there by both of their characters. Again, I think which strengthened both of their characters and could have been an amazing launching point for future Black Panther movies had Chadwick Boseman not tragically passed.
I think my favorite scene is the fight between the two of them. However, more specifically, it's leading up to it when Michael B. Jordan is kind of giving his hype speech and he's taking his shirt off and you see all those scars for the first time and he's like, this is what I was built for, you know, and just kind of really draws you into that moment. Really good dialogue there right before that fight scene. So I think the first part of that and then continuing into that fight scene is my favorite scene in the movie.
That probably would have been mine. Were you saying the throne room scene?
The scene that they're on top of a mountain.
Oh, okay, so I'll specifically...
He's stripping his shirt off and they're fighting before he throws him over the waterfall.
Okay, I'll specifically say the throne room scene when he first gets to Wakanda, because that, just them talking in that and the look on his face, like, because he could just walk in and just show everybody the tattoo, but he's in control and doesn't want anyone to know yet, and then finally when the guy asks, who are you? And then just the look on Angela Bassett, we didn't even mention her, so good. She's going to get nominated for Wakanda Forever. She may win. We may have the Marvel Universe getting their first Academy Award for acting because she was stellar. But the look on her face when he says, hey, auntie, like that, I was like, okay, this is awesome. So that'll be mine. Favorite line, I'll go first because this is just one of those times where I love this so much I don't want it to get stolen. Top five badass moment in the entire MCU when he takes the plane hovercraft, we're going to call it, down by himself and stands up and says, I never yielded. And as you can see, I'm not dead. Like, just that, his arms out, like, you ready, buddy? Because we're still fighting. Like, that, I love that. That will always be one of my favorite lines. They gave, part of it's the accent and who he is and how he is. He's the king of the strongest country in the world. He got to say some of the coolest lines in the entire Marvel Universe when he was on screen. Like I said, the one from Civil War, this one, it'll probably end up being my favorite line from Infinity War, so I won't say it yet. But he got to say a lot of really freaking cool things in his time, and that's mine.
I didn't realize that was Endgame when he said, I am Iron Man, right?
Yes, they did. They were like, you know what? Don't, like, RDJ, we love you, but wouldn't it sound cooler if you said it?
Yeah. So I'm gonna give the shout out to this line for favorite line. There's a lot of great lines in this, a lot of great dialogue. But this one, I think, just like perfectly summed up my relationship with my wife. And so for that reason, I picked it when, you know, Chadwick, as T'Challa says, if you weren't so stubborn, you would make a great queen. And the response was, I would make a great queen because I'm so stubborn. I like that one. It made me laugh. It made me smile. So that's my favorite line.
Yeah, I was coming into this with the same one that you had, Ethan. So it's a good thing that I didn't go first and I didn't have to steal it from you. So that's the one I had.
Hey, Auntie is my 1B. That's my second favorite line. I think that will do it. That is our conversation for Black Panther, kicking off season 3 of the threequel. And that means that next week we will be discussing...
The Crazies.
My pick for the month of February. We're starting off, in my opinion, two fantastic films. We will see if the other two... hosts on this podcast agree or disagree with me. If you want to know, find out next week as we talk the Crazies. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Other than that, guys, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.